You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. Whole Foods Market is a proud sponsor of Heritage Radio Network and Meatopia, the premier food event of the season, celebrating our meat suppliers, farmers, and butchers at Brooklyn Bridge Park, July 23rd. Watch a dozen Whole Foods Market butchers from across the country compete on stage for the title of Best Butcher. Visit www.meatopia.org for tickets and information.
Boys, I'm mellow as a honeydew. Yeah,
that cat is high. Look, that look in his eye. Oh man, he's high. Yes, higher than a kite.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. In the studio today, very long anticipated show. We have Janet and Avery Glasser from Bitterman's Bitter Company. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hey, thanks for having us here.
It's about damn time.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Well, I've been talking about this for months.
How are you guys doing today?
We're good.
Excellent. Excellent. So, jumping right into it, we have a lot to talk about, obviously. You guys started out making bitters in San Francisco, and then moved out to Boston, or moved to New York, then Boston. Then you were in Spain for a while, then back to Boston, and then now you're back where you belong in Brooklyn.
And staying there.
Yes.
Cool. So how did you get started making bitters in the first place?
You know what? The funny thing is, as we keep on getting asked, we had no idea we were going to get into making bitters. Back in 2007, I think it was, we were in San Francisco. And a local gin distillery was inviting folks over to go and have a day of drinking gin. And, you know, while they were there, they could raid the botanicals closet and put down some bitters.
Nice.
It was interesting because, you know, a lot of bars had been going out and, you know, we weren't bartenders at the time. We were still sort of not bartenders, but yeah, we had, you know, a bar that we had spent a lot of time at. And they said, hey, you know, come on along. And they were talking about bitters. And the head bartender really had no idea of, you know, what he wanted to do for bitters, but he would just complain that, you know, hey, you know, I'm from Mexico and I drink a lot of tequila and bitters just don't go well with tequila.
Well, that's not true.
Well, in his mind it was. And, you know, his little mistake about that was the impetus for us to think of, well, okay, you know, if you were going to make a bitter designed more for tequila, what would you do? So we thought,
and that was the idea for the Mole bitters. Mole, that's,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, had no idea if it would work. Made 12 bottles. You know, no one was doing chocolate, you know, yeah, in bitters, and no one was doing spice. And, you know, we put it together, and, you know, of course, oh, this is great. We love it. We love it. Yeah. And it's like, well, of course, we sort of made it for you. Of course, you're going to say that. And then we'd pass it out to some other bartenders. It was really that winter we had come out to New York. And we're at Death & Company and talking to Phil and Brian, and they, you know, taste it. Like, no, really, we'll put drinks on the menu with this if you can, yeah, guarantee us a supply.
Absolutely. I remember the first time I ever used your bitters or saw them. It was probably like, yeah, I guess it was like 2008. Mm-hmm. And they were coming in the little blue, not for resale label
bottles. Yeah.
And I remember, like, I was working at Linnell's at the time, and then Linnell gave me some samples of your stuff, and I remember watching that little blue bottle move to a bigger, like, clear glass bottle, still the same white label, not for resale, sample only, and then to another label, which we'll get to later, maybe, and then now to your to the current bottle. It was cool to see the progression and the changes in the growth of your company. It's really admirable because, like you said, you didn't really know what you were getting into it for, but it just kind of happened. It was very serendipitous, you know, that all happened. And also, like, especially with that first style of bitters, like, no one was doing chocolate bitters, but it makes so much sense, obviously, with mole, but bitter chocolate, you know, bitter dark chocolate, it just makes too much sense. And then, obviously, you know, like, from there, you know,
yeah, I mean,
you were making
the one after
drinks.
That, You know, you go into, you know, a grapefruit, and we do a hop grapefruit because, you know, hop's extremely bitter, but, you know, if you ever had a really good, you know, Pacific Northwest IPA, it tastes citrusy.
Absolutely.
So it made sense. So, yeah, bitter chocolate, which is not traditionally, you know, hasn't traditionally been used. You know, hops used for bitters, even though they've been traditionally used for, you know, for beer, they really haven't entered much into the cocktail space. So it's been fun sort of thinking in new ways about things that are bitter that haven't been in the cocktail world, but, you know, should be.
Yeah, it's like, I'm an avid collector of antique bitters bottles, and, like, I, you know, I'm always on eBay looking around for them. I probably shouldn't, like, give out these secrets because I'm going to end up being in a bidding war with more people now, but there's these old bitters bottles, and every once in a while you'll see one that's a hot bitters, but very rarely. And, like, when you told me, geez, a couple of years ago about, like, you know, like how you were doing the grapefruit bitters with the hops, I was like, oh my god, that's so like traditional, but, like, so obscure at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
But it makes so much sense, because, like you were saying, you know, it's like Green Flash IPA, you know, it's got a lot of, like, grapefruit and citrus to it, and it just makes it's from listening to your palate, it makes sense, but maybe not everyone gets it. But it's great that you're bringing these combinations to the world. It is the world now, because you're being distributed all over the place.
Australia, New Zealand just got restocked. France, if you're listening from France, your order is ready for pickup. It has been for 45 days. Please call the shipping company and have it come by. Looks like Italy will be coming on very soon.
Germany,
Spain.
Yeah.
Germany just got their first bottles. Yeah, Spain just got their second order in. Spain's really picking up. It's nice to see, and it's nice when we go to things like Tales of the Cocktail and we bump into bartenders from, you know, all around the world. We're like, oh, you're the guys behind Bitterman's. You know, we love your stuff. It's like, really? You're using us in Prague? I had no idea. Where are you getting these bottles from?
Well, it's just like, you know, some bars in New York City have bottles of Havana Club. It's not distributed here.
Yeah, no. Of course they don't have it. It's just a bottle for decoration. It's just
exactly. It's full of water or iced tea. So, with this show, you know, like our demographic is mostly, it's a lot of industry people, bartenders, servers, bar owners, ambassadors, you know, people, and also just general enthusiasts. But for the people who don't actually know what bitters are, can you just kind of, like, give us a general rundown of, like, that production, or not necessarily your secrets, but, like, just what bitters are by definition?
That's a very common question, actually.
Yeah.
Everyone, they come over to the bar, they're like, so what are bitters? It's like, well, if it's bitter, it's a bitters. But I mean, it's the idea of bitters is that they were tinctures of bitter things or of non-bitter things with very bitter components added to it, that are used to give little nuances of flavor but also bring bitterness into a drink. And bitterness helps bring a drink together. If you think about most things, you're getting sweet, you're getting, you know, sour, you're getting, you know, strong alcohol flavors. But bitters, unless you're pulling in Amaro or you're using a lot of vermouth, is not necessarily something that's naturally in a lot of cocktails. So bitters really are the seasoning of the cocktail world. It shouldn't be the primary flavor. It's not like when you get a roast chicken with tarragon, you don't want to taste the tarragon first then have a little bit of chicken there. You know, it's a chicken with a little
absolutely.
Bit of chicken.
I always say bitters are to a bartender that salt is to a, you know, a chef. You know?
Yeah, salt and pepper.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. But going even further back, I mean, bitters were originally
medicine.
They were medicine, and they got their name.
The FDA needs me to say they're not really medicine, but yes, they're folk medicine. It's things that are bitter. There's a physiological response when you have something bitter, and a lot of that goes because, you know, the reptile parts of our brain from you know, millions of years ago. Most things that are poisonous happen to also be bitter,
right?
So when you taste something bitter, your body responds. It starts to salivate. It starts to increase your digestion. It's trying to basically get it out of you quickly.
Right.
And it's
or
not until
do
you
do it with some food or
So it's just trying to do something to lessen the effect, thinking that it might be poison. So, you know, people found that they were, you know, really good stomach remedies, you know, mm-hmm. hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago. And eventually, you know, I figure there's probably some smart pharmacist who is doling out, you know, glasses of bitters to people after they were coming back from the bar the next day feeling hungover and sick, that, you know, had the idea of, oh, just put it in. I have no idea, but that's my thought of what probably happened. They said, hey, let's just add the bitters into the drink, you know?
Yeah. My theory was always, you know, you've got your bitters, that's your medicine, and it's bitter, so you don't want it to taste too bitter, so you mm-hmm. add a little bit of water to dilute it, maybe a little sugar to sweeten it, and then just back in the day, we were adding alcohol to everything, you know, and that's the...
Mary Poppins, you know, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down.
Exactly, exactly, man. That's exactly what it is, and, you know, like, that's like kind of like the birth of the cocktail, you know? You've got your sugar, your water, your bitters, and your alcohol.
Yeah.
That's your classic cocktail by definition in your old-fashioned, you know? I love the idea of, like, kind of going back to the... There were so many bitters brands back in the day. And, like, especially, like, looking around, you know, there are books on the subject, you know, just, like, collecting the bottles. And everyone had these medicinal claims for their specific recipes.
And that's what killed them. When what became the FDA started putting limitations, you know, for snake oil salesmen making medicinal claims on things that couldn't be proven, you know,
right,
partially
backed.
Yeah, well, and partially there was, you know, a lot of the pharmaceutical industry had interest in getting people not to use natural herbal remedies. Those two things together put the kibosh on a lot of the medical claims. Remove the medical claims. Take that, add prohibition, you know, and a lot of things just died out.
Pretty much the only one that survived, well, a couple of them. You had
Angostura.
Peychaud's, but not very, I mean, it was like hanging by a thread, wasn't it? I mean, did Peychaud's ever actually die out and then come back?
I know it was hard as hell to find it for a long time.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, it's interesting. They say, oh, yeah, made from the original, you know, 1869 or 18 whatever formula. I didn't think they used FD&C Red Number 4 back then. But so, obviously, there's been a little bit of change since the beginning. But, yeah.
Well, that's true of, you know, things like Campari, you know. It's like they're not using cochineal, you know, to...
I heard they actually went back.
That
there was enough... Yeah, anecdotal, I haven't heard this, you know, officially from anyone, but they said there was enough backlash that they've actually started putting cochineal back in.
That's amazing. You know, that's kind of an interesting thing to talk about just for a second as well. Like, you know, prohibition killed a lot of great products from back in the day. And, you know, like things like, it maybe without even just killing them, just like really made them extremely lame. Like, you know, like now you've got products like Galliano that's gone back to the Latintico, you know, the original recipe, but it took forever for that to happen. You know, like people, like the American palate died out, like with Prohibition. And then finally, after, you know, so many Harvey Wallbangers and things mm-hmm. like that, you've got like, nowadays we're living in a really great time. We talk about this a lot on the show. We're living in a great time for this style, this classic style, because the American palate's kind of like becoming mature again, you know? It's taken, you know, 90 years, but or 80 or 90 years, but it's finally getting back to that. So now you can actually sell things like Latintico Galliano, and you can have cochineal in your Campari, you know? And it's kind of amazing. And you can also have a bitters brand. With how many expressions do you have now? You have a lot of experimental stuff going on, I know.
We have 6 experimentals right now.
Yeah, and 5 standard brands. So we've got 11 different expressions right now. Of those, 7 are bitters, 2 are shrubs, and 2 are citrates.
Cool. I really like the spicy one.
No, the Hellfire.
The Hellfire,
right.
Yeah. So good.
You know, again, you know, it comes down from, you know, there are so many people who are playing with using spice in their cocktails, and either they're doing quick infusions of pepper into the spirit, which is great, but then you have a lot of that spirit left. You know, if you make up 2 liters of jalapeno tequila and people aren't drinking the jalapeno tequila, that's a lot of jalapeno tequila to go through. Well, for most people, it's a lot. You know, it's.
I wouldn't want to drink a liter of jalapeno tequila.
Yeah. You know, so.
Or hot sauce.
Yeah, or they were using hot sauce.
Right.
And hot sauce has the, you know, it's designed for food, so it's going to have very strong vinegar flavors and a lot of salt. Hot peppers like salt. Hot peppers really love vinegar, but, you know, doesn't mean that Tabasco is well-suited in most cocktail applications. There are some where it works really great.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I find, especially if you're dealing with a lot of vegetable juice, it really plays well. But if you're just trying to add a little hint of heat into a more classic cocktail, you know, you need to rethink it. And, you know, we had been recently at Russ and Daughters, you know, where we love to go and get, you know, fish products, and they're making a beet and lemon shrub. And I was like, well, shrubs. I mean, what is a hot sauce?
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it's a, you know,
it's spicy vinegar. Shrub.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And for our listeners, let's kind of talk about shrubs for a second, just so they know what that is. I mean, it's basically, it's a vinegar based flavored kind of tincture as well. I mean, there are certain things like, you know, like we've got like, I think the only shrub that we have like in the liquor world is like the
Creole shrub.
Yeah, the Creole shrub by Clément.
Yeah, I mean, shrubs really were, you know, an offshoot of what happens when the must or the wine, the fruit wine that you were fermenting started to turn. Mm-hmm. So as it started to get vinegary, you know, you didn't want to throw it out, and they found, you know, lightly sweetened, it's extremely refreshing. So shrubs are by definition, you know, slightly, they are vinegar based, you know, vinegar with fruit, vinegar with vegetable, vinegar with other flavors, usually fruit vinegars that are doing it. With our product, since we focus in the, you know, in the tincture and the things you use in small drops space, or at least for this side of our world, it's things we use in small drops. You know, so we make a tincture of a shrub. So it's a shrub that's still 44% alcohol, but, you know.
But don't drink it.
Yeah. You know.
No. Not like like our buddy Nick Jarrett popping off the top of the Angostura bottle and taking shots.
Yeah, you know, that's one of those things that, I mean, you know, back before we could legally sell and we were giving away products, you know, the original Little Blue bottles, which are, you know, not for sale or resale because they were pre-approval, so we had to do it as part of our pre-approval program. Yeah, at that point, it's like, no, don't do shots of it. We're giving it away for free. Now that we can actually sell it, it's like, oh, yeah, you know. Oh, someone wanted to do a version of a Trinidad Sour with an ounce and a half of the tiki bitters? Go for it. You know, love it. You know, yeah, buy more.
Dude, I have to say, I have actually taken a shot of the Moly Bitters on a dare, and it was delicious.
Yeah.
It was amazing. Going back to the shrub thing for a little bit, I mean, I know that a lot of times, like when people were working in the fields, they would drink shrubs to promote hydration as well, because like the salt in it, like the brininess of the vinegar, would make you want to drink more water. And it was actually like, again, like a folk medicine to where it would make you want to drink water, you know, and it would keep you hydrated. And there was, I mean, in Little House on the Prairie, there was a lot of talk about it, right? I mean,
yeah.
I remember that from Little House on the Prairie. Weird.
They were ahead of their time.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But it's so cool that, like, now you're doing products like this, and that we have things like this available. Whereas everyone, there's so many brands popping up nowadays that are these bitter companies, and we'll get to that here in a second after the break. But it's so cool that you guys are actually doing more forward thinking on this. You know, you've got like your tinctures. I've been to your bar, Amorio Margo, like too many times, which we're going to talk about after the break as well. And it's just really cool that there's so many great ideas. You guys have so many great ideas, and you're really like pushing it. You know, you're pushing. You talk about not being bartenders, but you're helping out as bartenders so much by like having these great ideas.
But that was, I mean, from minute one, you know, when Janet and I were talking about, you know, wow, it looks like we actually have a company here. You know, what are we going to do with it? And it was always the idea that, you know, we love you know, being out at bars drinking. I mean, it's that's the side of the bar where we're most familiar with and you know, most comfortable. We want to give new tools to bartenders for them to make new drinks. So it's about creating things that are unique, forward-thinking, but useful. And you know, it's interesting. I mean, we came out with the first chocolate spiced bitters in 2007. Now, how many different brands of people trying to do the same idea? You know, we went from innovating, and now now we're just being copied.
You're being flattered. say flattered.
Yeah, we'll say flattered. Yeah, in some cases, flattered. In some cases, a little confused with what they thought was flattery. But yes.
Well, I'm very flattered to have you on the show today. And when we get back from this break, we'll talk more with Avery and Janet Glasser about the Bitters Company. We'll also talk about Amore Margo and the future of this brand. We'll be right back.
Finger on the Pulse and City Winery are proud to present the Summer Barbecue Blowout Festival, August 6th, from noon to 4 p.m. The barbecue is happening at City Winery, located at 155 Varick Street in New York City. Restaurants featured at this event are Empire Mayonnaise, Van Dag, Momofuku Milk Bar, Imperial No. 9, Mile End, Mexi-Q, Kraft, Dizzy's Club, Coca-Cola, The Meatball Shop, and Dos Toros. Providing the soundtrack for the day are Midnight Magic, Pewter Magic, New Villager, Punches, Ducky, DJ Autobot, and the Snacky Tune DJ. VIP and general admission tickets are available at citywinery.com. Finger on the Pulse of City Winery would like to thank our sponsors, Heritage Foods USA, New York Magazine, Reka Vodka, Sonar, Smile, Guilt City, Sub-Zero, and Wolf. Please come out and join us for a day of fun, food, and dancing. For more information, go to www.fotpnyc.com.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. In the studio today, I'm very happy to have Avery and Janet Glasser from Bitterman's Bitters Company. And before the break, we were talking about some of the line that they produce, bitters and tinctures and shrubs, and how they got started. And do you guys have a lot's happened since 2007. Now you have a bar in the Lower East Side.
Yeah. So we, back in February, we were sitting around at Cienfuegos, a bar in the East Village. They used to have a sandwich shop, which had closed down in the winter after they opened up their side rum bar. The bar was really full, so we went. We were there with friends who were involved with it, and we went over into the side room, and we were talking to the owner of the space, and he was going, what should I do here? I said, a cocktail supply shop, because there's nowhere in the East Village, not many places in Manhattan, where you can go and pick up, strainers and bar spoons. Not just, there are places you can go to get, like at Williams-Sonoma and Sur-La-Table, getting the sort of things that a bartender would never use, that's either unwieldy or delicate or, just not what bartenders use.
I mean, you can get microplanes and things like that there.
Which are nice. But, it's...
Keelers.
Yeah, you can't get a standard, 18, 28, one-sided weighted, shaker set.
Yeah, totally.
And then he said, we have a liquor license here. I said, fine, make it an Amaro tasting room. Because you know, hey, we're like, hey, if they do that, we'll come here and drink a lot. And then a couple days later, you know, get an email. It's like, well, so we talked about it. And it's a good idea. And, you know, why don't you guys give us a proposal? It's like, what? It's no, no. We were just sort of throwing an idea.
Just throwing ideas out there.
out there. You know, we're trying to help you along. And it ended up, they said, so, you know, in, what was it, March we opened?
March, mid-March.
Yeah. In mid-March we opened. We just basically put on some wallpaper and put up some shelves and, you know, painted. And, yeah, it's been going great ever since. But because of that, we were able to launch our experimental line, which is, you know, the six flavors, the two shrubs, two other bitters, and the two citrates, because, you know, we can now actually interact with people and see how they're using them in cocktails and see how they like what it is. You know, because even though we're going to grow our brand and have more flavors being widely available, we don't want to end up having, you know, 45 flavors out there just taking up space and over half of them not being useful. You know, they work in one or two cocktails, but, you know, bartenders don't love them. You know, of the experimentals, three of them are marked for this fall going into full production and being available through our distribution network worldwide. So that's
cool. And like you said, you know, obviously you want to keep it, you want to keep your product line at a place where it is still useful. So yeah, I mean, like, and that utility really shows in the bar itself, because you like you said, you're selling all these bar products, you know, like bar tools and things, and like, you know, hell, if I'm on my way to work and I realize, like, oh my god, I left my bar spoons at a cocktail competition last night, and I'm never going to see them again because it's a hotel. You know, they're lost forever. I just swing by and pick up a couple of spoons, shaker tins, jiggers, all kinds of stuff. You guys sell.
Yeah, we've had people from places stuff. You know, across the street. It's like, oh, they broke their juicer. You know, it's like, okay, you know, we need to buy three hand juicers because we got a lot of stuff to go through. It's, you know, it's, which is nice. You know, we like the fact that we have a lot of industry people who come in, not just drinking and having fun, but, oh, before they go and bring in another Amaro into their cocktail program, they get to come over and taste it and ask and find out, you know, do people like it? How do you use it? So it really is, you know, an educational resource, you know, for everyone, but for the industry as well, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I found, and I've been trying to talk the owners at my bar into letting me order it, because they're kind of... They're like borderline prohibitively expensive, but the beer schnapps that you guys have,
those are
awesome. Those are amazing.
Yeah, I mean,
I haven't seen those anywhere else, really.
I haven't either.
No,
I want to get them in my place.
You should have them. I mean, it would fit your program, and you have Aventinus there, right? At the bar,
I've had it in before.
You've had it in before.
Yeah, we try to rotate around.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, there's nothing better than, you know, having Aventinus beer schnapps, which is just distilled Aventinus.
Yeah,
and and an Aventinus beer next to it. I mean, there's just something sort of, you know, alpha and omega about just having the two things sitting there.
Yeah, absolutely. Last time I was in Colorado, which was not very recent, I was having some of the Stranahan's Colorado whiskey with a Flying Dog. The pale ale.
Yeah.
Mm. And it was kind of cool to see, like, you know, having the aged distillate and then the actual beer. Because I guess they're not using Flying Dog anymore, but they originally were using Flying Dog Brew, their low wines. And, that's a totally great idea. And there's also, like, Hitachino makes one.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the Hitachino, the Origa Stickum, which is Origa Sticka beer. The one thing about the Aventinus I really like is that we've been in Germany and actually had it at, you know, one of their brew houses, you know, at the Weisses Brewhaus. They serve it. They've been doing it for a long time. I'm pretty sure that the other beer schnapps that are coming out are mostly for export. They're not necessarily something that was being done, and then they decided to, hey, let's get it to America.
Oh, so they're just going to, like, make them for the market? Or?
I'm not sure. You know, I just know that it's... I haven't seen them, you know, when we were in Dusseldorf, I didn't see it there as a product. Maybe I just didn't notice, which is possible. But it feels like, with that one, that they're doing so much aging and, you know, oh, you can get it in cognac, you can get it in, you know, Spätburgunder casks and things like that. And you say, well... Okay, they're doing a lot to it, but, you know, most schnapps and geists and brands back in Germany were meant to be, you know, distilled and consumed.
Distillate, yeah, yeah. Are we still on for Oktoberfest this year?
Hell yeah! We've got our table. we hope you're going to be there. Yeah, yeah. We've got our 10 seats. Yeah,
I'm trying my hardest. Yeah, so...
Yeah, listen, once you get out, it's just the flight that's pricey. Once you get out there, the beer is cheap.
Yeah. Oh, plentiful. It's really about scheduling. It's really about scheduling, you know. I'm supposed to be in Cognac from the 13th to the 18th.
Well, the trick is just, you know, find something to do for another week, you know, in Europe. And then
I'm sure I could find something to do for a week in Europe.
Find something that can be sponsored for you to do for a week.
There you go.
Don't be looking at us when we say sponsorship over there. We're not that big.
Well, you will be one of these days. Probably very soon, actually, with the way you're being distributed nowadays. Speaking of that, let's go back a little bit and talk about the production. I know we've talked a little bit in the past, maybe a lot, actually, about like the production and the legalities of the production of bitters, and how it's not necessarily something that I'm not trying to like blow anyone's cover or anything like that, but there are certain like government approvals that have to be met. And you guys are like pretty much one of the few like that actually have all your like legit approvals. Can you just run us through like some of that stuff real quick? I know this is kind of like a touchy subject, but it's extremely interesting to me.
But, you know, it recently changed altogether after all the stuff we went through for 3 years.
Oh, which is sort of annoying now.
Now you don't really need any of those. Well, basically.
Yeah.
A lot less.
A lot less.
At least.
Originally, when we were filing, one of the things that you had to do is you had to work with the TTB, which is a Taxation and Trade Bureau for the Division of Alcohol and Tobacco. No firearms for this one.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they took away the guns from the alcohol. But you...
I said that right as Janet was taking a drink of beer. She's about to spill over the microphone. sorry, Jack.
Originally, you had to present all of your formulas for non-beverage products. So anything that uses ethanol is beverage alcohol unless it's proved not to be. So you would have to go take your formulas, submit them in, submit samples for testing, go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth because they weren't allowed to ever make changes. They could just tell you what you did wrong.
And send it back to you.
And then you'd fix that, which led to another problem. So they could only tell you the first thing that basically broke down in the process. And they were very, very nice to deal with. I mean, they were great, but it just took a long time. It took us over a year going back and forth. It wasn't until 2008 that we actually became legal. Our formulas became legal. That part has now changed. I'll talk about that in a second. But then once you do that, you still have other limitations. You still have to be legal to produce in the state, city, and county where you are. So when we were living in Massachusetts, we were trying to get our kitchen, our home kitchen, registered. And they said, well, no, we don't have any provisions. If you were a home baker, you could do it.
Right.
And even though we know logically this is more safe, less bacteria haven, blah, 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 than baking, we don't have any provision to make it legal for you to have that much alcohol and produce alcohol-containing products at your house. So you can't just rent a... Yeah, and you can't just rent a kitchen because at that point, the TTB could come in at any time and inspect your records and see your process and see your equipment.
And you need to store everything there, store the recipes there.
So you couldn't just like rent a kitchen for an hour or a week or a month and do it. You actually had to have a permanent space.
It had to be full time.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So that still is a requirement. I mean, we built out our own kitchen. We are licensed by the Department of Agriculture and Markets to produce food product. They have reviewed our process. They reviewed our process. They inspected us. We are licensed to collect sales tax, even though it's a food product, so we don't have to. But we're licensed to collect sales tax in New York. We're registered in New York. You know, we are an actual company, an entity that is able to do this. The laws changed recently with the TTB, where now you can do self-assertion, where they give you a list of ingredients. And if you have these ingredients at least this amount, then you don't have to pre-submit your formula to the government. Which doesn't mean that you can just produce anything. You still have to. You can't say, oh, you know, there was one producer was saying, oh, use a drop or just, you know, put it in a glass and take a shot like Underberg. It's like, okay, but you just asserted that it can be used as a beverage. Now it's beverage alcohol because you made that assertion. You still need to make sure that all of your ingredients are legal to use, that the FDA and the USDA have lists of generally recognized as safe things. If it's not on the list, you can't use it. So there's a lot of things that you still need to do to be legal. Bluntly, in the state of New York, based on what I've seen, I don't think it's legal to be able to produce bitters in your house. Because I don't think you can get a Department of Agriculture and Markets certificate to produce, you know, alcohol-containing products at your house.
Yeah. I know a couple of people.
Yeah, no, I mean, I know people who are doing it, especially in the bitters space, who are, you know, oh, wouldn't it be fun to make a bitter? Or
right.
Well, as a hobby, it's okay.
Well.
But to sell.
Yeah, the minute that you sell it.
Yeah.
Or that you give it to a store for resale. You're mm-hmm. putting them at jeopardy if you don't have all of your ducks in a row to produce legally.
Yeah. Like some of those, it's interesting because like some of those ingredients that were used in old bitters recipes, like for instance, like snake root.
Yep. Mm. Virginia snake root. In our first version of the bitters, we used a small amount of it. FDA ruled it not legal. Second batch didn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, found other herbs that gave a similar thing, or you know, tonka bean, things like that. Now there's concern about things that have caffeine. Mm-hmm. So oh, really? We use some coffee beans in some of our formulas. We switched to decaf thanks right. to that, you know, horrible Four Loko stuff, which caused an industry circular to go
right.
out about
oh, man.
Caffeine including alcoholic beverages.
About that. Oh wow. Yeah, that was a whole shit show.
It wasn't even a good product. And I'm just, I'll go out there and say it wasn't even a good product, you know, but it's, yeah. So these are all the things that we think about. You know, there's a lot of people come to us, oh, are you ever going to do a tobacco bitter? It's like, do you understand how fast nicotine leaches into alcohol, how completely it goes, and how seriously. It's a neurotoxin?
Yeah. I mean, like, well, on that subject, things like Perique tobacco liqueur, like that Ted Bro's making. I mean, obviously, it's not legal in the United States.
No, it's legal.
It's legal?
To the best of my knowledge, you can purchase it legally. There's a legal importer there. And because it is legal, they've had to submit their formula and process. And they have to submit it, my guess, because we have to do this because of quinine. They've had to submit their samples in for testing, probably for nicotine. And get past that it was below whatever the legal limit is. I mean, we have a certain, you know, we can't be over 83 parts per million in quinine. So we submit, we test, we make sure we're under it, then we can produce our formulas.
I had no idea that was legal here now. I've been hoarding it.
I mean, I've bought bottles in the States from liquor stores in California. So, I mean, it's...
Really? Wow. Yeah, and that whole, like, FDA approval, you know, like, that's the reason why we can't get things like... You know, Grand Chartreuse, Elixir Vegetal, you know, things like that.
I know. That's not why.
Because, well, they don't want to give up their entire recipe.
Right. That's an ATF issue. That's a TTB issue that they have to give up their whole recipe. The FDA has sort of changed. The FDA has become really sort of lax. They've now taken the attitude of, well, you follow the directions, and then if you screw up, we'll tell you and fine you. You know, you put
the
label
the
to... Yeah. No, it's not even filling out forms anymore. Here's the guidance of how to make a label for our products. There's no place where you'd say definitively what should be on a label. And even if you go to these expensive consulting firms who handle like labeling, and they'll come back and say, well, this is all based on our interpretation and our knowledge of what the FDA is looking for these days. But you really don't know until they decide to challenge it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wrap your head around that one. You know, yeah.
That's kind of crazy. It's like a FDA for dummies. Like, just get the pamphlet and make our label.
Yeah, you would think it's like here's a label. It's like this has to be this big and this needs to be here and this needs to be here. But there's no one single source to go to. So
it's awesome. It's so fascinating to talk to you guys about this stuff because obviously you're very passionate about not only your products but the process. And I mean, like, we're gonna see you down at Tales of the Cocktail.
Yeah, sponsoring
right?
this year. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. You're gonna be kind of all over the place this year.
Yeah.
And now that you've got, like, you know, you got your new labeling, you've got your Dasher tops. We could talk about this for a lot longer, but we're gonna wrap up here in a second. What are some of the other plans that you have with Bitterman's as a company?
Well, I mean, the next phase for the company is...
More distribution, or...?
Well, that's always there, but we've decided there's more areas in the cocktail world that have sort of been ignored. You know, bitters and tinctures was the first. We're moving into the spirits world this year. Cool. We can tell now that we actually have formulation approval for a number of cordials and liqueurs.
Cool.
We are waiting for our label approval. which, you know, was supposed to take 45 days. Now it's taking about 90 days for that. And our goal is that by late fall, we'll be releasing a small spirits line.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to it. And I can't tell you how much I have appreciated having you guys on the show. And I really look forward to trying some of these cordials. I know we talked about that a little bit before, but I can't wait to see it come into fruition. No pun intended. All right, guys. Well, we're going to see you at Tales of the Cocktail next week down in New Orleans. But I'm sure we'll be seeing you back at the show sometime soon. Wink, wink.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. I want to thank my guests, Avery and Janet Glasser from Bitterman's Incorporated.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I guess technically now Bitterman's Inc. and Bitterman's Spirits Inc.
Nice. And thanks again for coming on the show. I want to thank producer Jack Inslee. And we'll see you next week on Speakeasy. Cheers.
That cat is high. Yes, he's high. Man, he's higher than a kite.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
This is Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer. AMP goes local. The Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, commonly known as the AMP, that grocery chain you've seen all your life, has glommed onto the concept of local and sustainable and has just introduced a new consortium of producers known as the Mid-Atlantic Country Farms, from which they will source beef and poultry. The animals are antibiotic and hormone-free, raised on vegetarian feed. There is no mention of certified humane or animal welfare approved status, however. Maybe they haven't gotten that far in the marketing department. But what makes this of interest is that AMP supplies all AMP supermarkets, Pathmark, Food Emporium, Waldbaum's, and Superfresh. These are not particularly high-end supermarkets, so this is good news for the average consumer. If you want to read more about this, you can go to the AMP website, which is www.apt.com/pressroom. This has been Behind the Scenes Food News with Katie Kiefer.
Saturday, July 23rd, Bushwick Block Party. It's a party in the street. Free pizza by Roberta. Death Killer Death Wrestling. Featuring the legendary Mad Dog Tosto. Photo booth by Ryan Slack. Water World. Closed by Chimera Dactyl. Mary Meyer. Warren Bogart. Death Killer Asphalt Resistant Jeans. All types of food for your face. Sweet soda by P&A. Roberta's Bake Sale. Heritage Foods USA. Orange Chaney Eating Contest by the Orange Chaney Brothers. Live music by Alex Trujan. Florida Paper Twin. Dang Sign. The Netherlands. Team Robespierre. Wild Yak. MC Todd and Bo Breezy. Night Show. Yeah. Sponsored by Martin Greenfield Clothers. Free Fitness Studio. Heritage Radio Network. Free Williamsburg. 6 Point Beer. Momo's Sushi Shack. Beer Box USA. Planet of the Bates. Bushwick Block Party. It's a party in the street.
All day long. Oh.